stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome to Wednesday. It's November 13th. What's today? Are you not able to hear anything?
I'm getting cracklies here.
Oh, really?
Coming in and out, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. So why didn't you pick up that
it's
pair?
Good. It's good now.
Oh, it
I'm
is?
I'm good now. Yeah, it was just okay. Like every like
maybe something's wrong with the wire there.
Yeah.
So we'll,
no, it's all right. I'm just not going to touch it.
No, I'm glad you told me because now
like...
we have to replace it. So
yeah.
At least we know.
I'm just not going to move. I'm going to be, like, legit, like, frozen.
No, no, no.
The
you can take
show.
The other pair. What's the big deal?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. No, you know, it'll be good. It'll be, like, a good, like, you know, like, workout thing. Because, like, all my muscles will be, like, tense
yeah,
and, like, tighten
keep,
up. So I won't move. And then I'll, like, be ripped by
line.
The end of the show.
Yeah. Wow. So what's today, Mia?
Oh, today is Wednesday,
uh-huh.
The camel day.
Did I have
day,
to remind
of course.
You? Or did
oh,
you know?
No, no.
You do.
I try to think of, like, different, like, clever ways of bringing it up.
Right.
You know, like last
yeah.
week I was talking
so
about
today
it
I
at the end of the commercial.
Yeah. I thought I'd beat you to it that I don't have to hear about it. Wow. So, anyway, it's a beautiful day again today, and they're saying it's going to be like 90 degrees
yes,
today.
Yes, it's ridiculous. My
yeah.
phone says like it's going to be like 87.
Yeah,
like,
November, folks.
In November. I mean, yesterday was such a teaser, you know, because
right.
it was so gloomy. I'm thinking, okay, now it starts.
Yeah.
Now the, you know, winter season starts and, you know, because we only have two seasons. We have, like,
that's
summer
true.
And winter.
Barely that.
There is
too.
No, like, spring and fall. Like,
right.
there really is no in-between here. It's, like,
yeah.
just two.
Yeah, usually you can point to a single day where there's just a turnaround, you know? It's, like, it's hot one day and then it starts being cool the next day and that's it. It just stays like that, you know?
Yes, I am so...
And vice versa, too.
So confused. But whatever. It's cool. I don't hate it. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
How can
beautiful.
You hate such a beautiful day?
I know. Meanwhile, everybody back in the Midwest is like freezing their ass off with
oh, really?
Ice
is
and
it cold
snow
there already?
And oh my gosh, yes.
It's so hard to imagine when we're here and it's dry, you know, to imagine
yeah.
all that.
I know. It's so difficult. I feel so bad.
Yeah, I know. And that typhoon in the Philippines, man, I just can't believe
mm-hmm.
the devastation. Did you see some pictures from it, like TV printed on
yeah, it's
online?
Yeah, it's so sad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's destroyed. Like,
yeah, I
destroyed.
Mean, and these people are, like, dying of hunger and all that. You know, I mean, not literally, but they're saying it's dark, it's wet, you know, at night, there's nothing to eat, and help
gosh.
Is far away. So, you know, I mean, and you're looking at all these people and, you know, the people that have been hit the most are the poorer people because they don't
right.
live in the city, you know, because the city wasn't touched that much, you know, I mean,
uh-huh.
the damage wasn't that high. But you go to the rural areas and stuff, you know, and it was just extremely, extremely devastating, you know. I don't know what the death toll is now. They're not really saying, but.
Wow, they probably don't even know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still so many missing, and like they just,
right.
they probably have no idea.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, it's like, can you imagine, you know, you're there with your family, and suddenly this thing happens, and you don't know where they disappear to, you don't know where they are.
I know, if there's no warning, no nothing.
Yeah,
like,
you know, I mean, they did have a warning, but many of them didn't evacuate, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't realize what the devastation was going to be like. But it's crazy, you know, and imagine all the little kids and, you know.
No amount of, like, warning is enough to, like, completely just pack up your life and, you know, trust that, you know, things are going to happen and, you know, get out of Dodge as fast as you can.
Yeah.
You know, and then also, like, where are you going to go for the poorer people? They don't, you know what I mean, have money to, like, put themselves up in a hotel maybe, more towards, like, the city area where it's more safe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know, man, but it's...
You know,
it's,
what you can do in that situation.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the thing is then what happens to people in hospitals and people... you know, if what if somebody's ready to give birth? I mean, and I'm sure there were a lot of them.
I'm sure
right
that
during
was happening.
That time,
yeah.
You know? Wow. Yeah, it's hard to think about, you know, and I'm just glad we're at a good climate area where we don't.
Yeah. Could you imagine that though? That. Like being like that would be so incredible to like survive through that. Like, oh, while I was born, there was a natural disaster occurring.
Yeah.
And we made it through.
Only the worst that's ever happened, wow. You know. And I've been through it. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I mean, if you come out of it alive, it's a pretty good story, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, wow, that'd be, that'd really be something.
Yeah. So today, in a few minutes, we're going to have an author calling in. And he calls himself author of homoerotic romance. And So he's gay, and that's what he tries to let people know. So he writes about relevant things and so forth. So we'll talk to him about it and see. Whoops, you see his website? It's like you run the mouse over and it makes these noises.
I heard it. I'm like, are you turning pages? That's kind of what it sounds like.
I know. Why do people do that? You know, I mean, the you can't have sound on a website. Well, I guess this is okay. It's not something that's music that starts right away.
Yeah.
I hate those, you know.
Yeah, no, I know.
I don't get it at all. I mean, give people an option to turn it on and off, you know.
Yeah. Well, they're just, you know, trying to make it cute.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, well, there's a lot of stories we'll get to. I have some things I wanted to bring up. But what about you? Any theme parties coming up this weekend?
Funny you should mention, Sam.
Yeah, it's become a regular thing now.
I know. I know. It's ridiculous. Actually.
Actually, there is.
Saturday is another masquerade themed party.
Oh, wow.
And at the last masquerade party, both of us somehow managed to like lose our masks.
Really?
So we need to get new ones. Yes. Like, I don't know. I don't know how that happens, but yeah.
So you put on a mask, but what do you wear?
Well, I think my boyfriend mentioned that he wanted to wear a tuxedo.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, well, I guess that probably requires me to wear some sort of fancy-ish dress.
Yeah. So it's supposedly, like a ball or something, you know, like a masquerade ball.
Yeah, like
ball
a masquerade. But the other one, you know, we had, that was the day that we actually had three different theme parties in a row.
Oh, God.
We had, like, the boho chic birthday party, and then we had the masquerade party, and then the leather and lace party.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so the masquerade one
was in the
middle.
I don't know how you even keep track of all that.
But, see, but the thing about that one is that there were maybe, like, three people wearing masks. Like, it wasn't really a masquerade party. Like, nobody was really wearing it.
Right.
So then I just kind of felt silly, like everybody else. Like, we just, you know, all kind of took our masks off and just kind of put them down, because it's like, well... It's a little silly because nobody's really participating unless they got like that one on the stick, you know, where you could just hold it up when you want to.
Right,
I think that's probably going to be my next purchase.
Yeah.
So I don't have to like tie it and get it stuck in my hair and then the feathers are falling in my mouth and I'm like, oh, man, glitter in my eyes. Like these masks could be a bit of a nuisance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like fun for a second, and then you're like, okay, I have no peripherals here.
Yeah.
Like, I have no peripheral vision. I cannot see clearly.
I can't see anything. Yeah, I know. They can be a pain in the ass.
Especially if you're in heels, and then you're outside, and it's kind of dark. Like, it's a little frightening.
Yeah. You know, Masquerade Party reminds me of the movie Eyes Wide Shut. Did you ever see that with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman? It was a very sexual movie. So the masquerade there was like a sex party, you know?
Oh,
so people would come
my.
Dressed up, yeah, and you couldn't see. They had like masks and stuff, so you couldn't tell who was who. But they were all having sex all over the house, you know?
Oh.
Like orgies and stuff. So you never know what that party might lead to.
Okay.
So be prepared, you know, wear clean underwear and everything.
Clean underwear. Always.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah, I'm a bit of a, I don't know, I'm kind of a bit of a germaphobe.
Yeah?
Like I'm very, I always have clean underwear.
Yeah. Well, I do too, you know. But I don't know if it has to do with germs other than just feel clean,
Yeah,
you know?
Just like a, you know.
Feel clean and fresh,
hygienic,
you know.
Person.
Yeah. I guess it's true that some people wear clothes over and over, right, without washing them first.
Yeah.
I never do that, you know. I mean, always I wear clothes once, they go in the hamper, you know.
Yeah. So, it depends. I mean, if it, like, especially, like, obviously, like, you know,
yeah,
gym clothes and stuff.
Yeah.
But,
but if it's a coat or a jacket or something, you probably don't, you know.
Right,
because it doesn't really get sweaty or anything, or it's smelly, and so you can do that. But what can I tell you, you know? I mean, you know, I like clean things and stuff. So that's why I always have, like, a lot of laundry, man. I do my laundry, like, twice a week.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of laundry.
Yeah, it is.
But I don't know how. I only wear one outfit every day, you know.
Yeah, so I don't know.
It just ranks up quickly, I guess, towels and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not?
Here we go. I think our guest is calling, so let's go ahead and take the call. And good morning.
Hi, I'm calling in a little bit early for an interview I've got scheduled with Sam Hassan.
Yes, you're right, and you're right on the air, Damon. Welcome to the show. Damon, are you there?
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me today. We're live on the air right now. Oh, great.
We are, yeah. I always try to let the guests know you're calling right into the show live, but sometimes they don't tell the client all the details, you know. So
that is totally fine. Thank you so much for inviting me today.
Sure. So we're talking to Damon Swade, and you're calling us from where today?
I'm calling from Manhattan, New York, New York.
Oh, wow. Has that been your home always?
No, I grew up in Texas, in deep, deep, deep in the anus of Red State, Texas. And I moved up here to go to school about 25 years ago and just never left. I had a brief hiatus in London, but I'm pretty much a New Yorker at heart.
Oh, wow. So what made you move from Texas?
I grew up as a showbiz kid. I was a song and dance kid. And when I got to be about 16, I graduated from high school early. I was an honor roll student. And I thought I wanted to be in theater. And basically that meant I had to get my butt to New York. And so I came up here and then quickly realized I did not want to be in theater. I wound up going to London for a couple of years to do shows as a schmactor. And then returned, and I've been writing ever since my early 20s.
Okay.
Oh, very cool.
As a schmactor, what's a schmactor?
I think of it as an actor who's paying the bills, but is maybe not doing the most credible, intelligent work.
I see.
So it's definitely more on the Pauly Shore dialectic as opposed to the Kate Blanchett.
I see. Okay.
Schmactor. Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Yeah, it is. So so
I like that.
Well, this is cool. So now, so what do you do in New York now?
I'm a writer. I'm a full-time writer. I have been, I started out in theater and film as a screenwriter and playwright. And a while back, a friend of mine dared me to write a romance novel. I mean, literally dared me. And I sat down, I wrote a book in 6 weeks. I sold it in 2 days, and then it was number one on Amazon for 6 months.
Wow.
And that was Hothead, which was my first romance novel. And it sort of changed my career, because I had always thought of myself as being in a wholly other part of the entertainment industry, and I discovered the romance community, which is really sort of vibrant and dynamic and loving, and I dove into it.
Right. So now we understand that you write like gay erotica. Is that what you write pretty much?
Technically, it is gay erotic romance. I wouldn't call it gay erotica because it involves, straight up involves a love story that ends positively. I would say gay erotica is one-handed fiction, meaning you can spank one out while you read it. Gay erotic romance often has a lot of sexual content, but it's not necessarily porn. Right. And kind I feel like gay erotica is a sort of fancy porn.
Oh, like okay. a Fifty Shades of Grey.
Yes, Fifty Shades of Grey is sort of an erotic romance. Meaning right. there's some spanky, there's some handcuffs, but then they hug at the end and she gets a makeover and they end up together forever.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow, this is cool. So you've been writing for a long time, right?
A very long time. I was raised by a very, very, in a very verbal house. I was an early reader and an early writer, and obviously I talk a lot, and so I quickly realized you should do the things in life you're passionate about, and I love to tell stories. And so I sort of fell into it almost just based on ability and interest, and have been doing it ever since.
Right. Well, that's amazing. I wish we could have scheduled you when you were in town. You were here this past weekend, right?
I was in town for BenCon. Right. BenCon is an LGBT comic convention that was out in Burbank this past weekend. It was fantastic.
Oh,
really
right.
fun, cool people, and very inclusive. We had a blast. Although I will say it would have been hard to schedule an interview because it was pretty much wall-to-wall all weekend. It was a nutty, nutty weekend.
Sounds good. So it sounded like a fun trip for you.
Absolutely. Really entertaining.
Right. So you're saying like with your first book already, you sold it in 2 days? That was your first
book? I sold
book.
It to my publisher in 2 days, and it went to number one on Amazon and just camped out for 6 months, which no book had done before, no gay romance had done before, and no gay romance has done since. It was a bit of a lightning strike book, and that sort of woke me up because I realized, oh, hey, there's actually a career here, there's living to be made here, and the fans were so amazing. I mean, they were so warm and accepting and friendly, and little by little I realized, hey, why am I working sort of in the Hollywood gulag? I think I'm going to do something that's a little bit more fun and escapist.
Right.
And I'm really, really, I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for the life change.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
very cool. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, people, you know, write books and books over and over, and they don't get it published, you know, and you manage to do something well, and I guess it's your passion and everything. You sound like an outgoing person, so
absolutely,
I know that helps quite a bit in selling books and stuff. So
and it started off with a dare.
Yeah,
it already
literally
has a great story behind it.
A friend of mine was working on a book, and she was having terrible plot problems. And one of the things I did for film a lot was I would get hired to beat out story problems. I was sort of a white knight who would come in to solve problems. And so we were sitting on the phone. My boyfriend is a forensic investigator, and he was out on a case. And so we were on the phone. She was having story problems, and I started talking through what she was doing. And about an hour into the conversation, she said, "Okay, you're a moron if you don't go write a romance. You think like a romance writer."
Right.
And as it happened, she was exactly right.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, I mean, it's like you find your niche early in life, and it's pretty cool, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the name of the first book again?
The first book is called Hothead.
Okay.
H-O-T-H-E-A-D, two words.
Right.
And it is about love and porn in the FDNY, post-9/11.
What's
oh,
that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it sounds
that
very fluffy, but it actually is a pretty intense book because obviously 9/11 is not a light topic. So it's sexy, but it's also, there's definitely some seriousness in it.
I see. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, you were there probably at 9/11 when it happened, right, in New York?
I was. I wasn't at the World Trade Center, but I live, relatively close, and it, you know, it transformed the city. And the book, in a lot of ways, that book is very much a love letter to New York and to the resilience of New Yorkers because I think of myself very much as a New Yorker, and the book itself is kind of a valentine to the tenacity and imagination of New Yorkers.
Right.
Without really meaning to, all of my books have ended up being set in New York. My new book, A Bad Idea, is also set in New York, but a very different New York. Hothead was very much about sort of blue-collar mooks in Red Hook. And the new book is about comic book artist and a movie makeup designer. So it's different, totally different part of New York, but very much a Manhattan book.
Right. So, yeah, well, it's not a coincidence. I mean, that's what you have experience in, and you know the...
Absolutely.
You know, and you know the city and everything, so it's easy to get the details correct. And
well, and also, too, I think people have... I think people who don't live in New York understand it as a mythical place, and they love the idea of visiting it. I mean, there's a reason that so many of our movies and so much television is set either in L.A. or New York, because they are mythic cities. But also, too, like, native New Yorkers will read the book and say, oh, my God, it's exactly like that. So I think that the specificity is what, you know, is what helps sell the setting in a book.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so the second book is just came out, right?
The second novel. I've actually had, this is the fifth book. I've had three novellas that came out in the interim, shorter stories. The second full-length novel is called Bad Idea. It released on October 21st. And it's about a comic book. It's really about pop culture. It's about fandoms and the people who make superheroes.
Wow, that's cool. So you into that? You've been into comics?
Well, I've written for Marvel and DC, so I've written comics, and I've read comics off and on. My boyfriend is a passionate comic dork.
Right.
Passionate. He loves them.
That's
and
awesome.
So I have been to Comic-Cons with him, and because I've worked in the industry, I know a lot of the behind the scenes.
Right.
The book itself, one of the heroes is a comic book creator, and the other, the love interest, is a man who designs movie monster makeup. And so all of my experience in film and my experience in comics kind of spills over. And I think people like that kind of nitty-gritty, behind-the-scenes peek, you know?
Right.
And so that definitely there's a lot of intel about those two industries.
Right. That's amazing. So I see on the website you've written some essays as well. So obviously you love to write.
I love to write.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you write about in your essays?
Well, you know, it's funny, the audience for gay romance, it sounds counterintuitive, but the audience is largely heterosexual women.
That's what I
in
thought.
In fact, by a wide margin.
Wow.
And I'm fascinated by the things that gay romance says about sexuality, and specifically about female sexuality, because you would never think that, I mean, on the one hand, you would never think, oh gosh, why would chicks want to read about two gay dudes making out?
Right.
On the other hand, if you talk to the average straight man and you say, hot, girl on girl,
right,
everyone's like, yeah, yeah, lesbians are hot.
Exactly, let's read about that, yeah. That's
well, it
true.
Speaks so, to this funny gender obsession with the other, right, with the thing that you are not or the thing you don't have.
Right.
And I think one of the cool things about gay romance is it's become a way for an entire community of women to examine gender roles and to really talk about what a love story is.
Right.
Because in one sense, like, yes, right, I'm writing about two dudes that fall in love. On the other hand, it's really about relationships that kind of step outside the box.
Right.
If I give you a romance novel from 1945 about a male doctor and a female nurse and they fall in love, you know certain things are going to happen. The man is going to be tall and strong and rich, and the woman is going to be passive and weak and submissive and pretty. And the truth is, that's not what men and women are.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that's been happening in romance fiction for the last 25 years is that romances have pushed back. Women have gotten feisty, and women are flawed, and the men are more passive and more contemplative. We have vampire romances because it's not enough to have people worry about their virginity. Now they have to worry about having their throats torn out. Now we have spanking romances because E.L. James has reinvented the vampire romance as a BDSM romance.
Right.
And I think that LGBT romance is part of that. It's not that, I mean, parts is parts, right? It's not that, it's just people loving each other.
Right.
And I think that saying it's two men falling in love lets these readers and writers kind of look at what love is in a way that you might not be able to if you stick to these norms, right? If you stick inside the box of what you expect a romance to be.
Right.
We've all seen movies that just do one thing. I mean, how many people go to Spider-Man and expect Spider-Man to blow up and die in the end of the first act?
Right.
No, we know that the superhero will live through it. And yet, in a gay romance, you don't know who the hero is going to fall in love with because sort of all bets are off.
Yeah. So this is interesting. I mean, you're saying that women get turned on by two men together as well. And that's pretty interesting because I didn't realize that. I mean, many women say, no, it doesn't turn me on or anything. But,
well, I mean, think about it
maybe
this way,
secretly.
Too. I think turned on is even limiting because porn, on the one hand, porn is supposed to get you juicy, right?
Right.
But romance is supposed to make you feel. And so,
That's true.
I think there are definitely women who are watching gay porn right now as we talk on the phone. They are downloading gay porn and watching it.
Yeah.
No question.
The, yeah,
the
but
time,
the two two only women in the world that watch porn. Sorry.
Somewhere in the world, there's gay romance being watched by a straight woman. But at the same time, it's really about emotional availability. Is that what is a romance about? This goes back to Pride and Prejudice. That entire novel is about trying to crack the nut of Darcy and see what he's thinking and know what he's feeling. And when you take a gay romance, you have two heroes for the price of one, and they're both giving emotional availability and vulnerability to the reader. And so, yes, it's a turn on. I mean, yes, like hot people doing hot things is hot, whatever.
Right.
But more importantly, the emotion is there, and the access to men's vulnerability is there. And I think that is the core of the heterosexual female reader's romance experience.
Right.
They want to see inside the man. And this is why when you like watch talk shows and people will, you know, women will say, he doesn't talk to me, he's not a communicator. Or men will say, I just don't like to talk about all that mushy stuff. And the truth is, a gay romance rug pulls all that, because suddenly you have dudes that are actually opening up about feelings, and the feelings they're having are not cookie cutter. So it allows these readers and writers to play with a whole bunch of stuff in the world of romance.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing, you know. So, I mean, you've got quite a body of work already. And so tell people where they can find the books, where they can read more about you and what you write about.
Well, my name is Damon Swade, and if you go to damonswade.com, that's DAMONSUEDE.com, or I'm available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, All Romance, Rainbow eBooks, I'm all over the web. If you Google the name Damon Swade, it will immediately take you to any of the places that would myself be available. And I'm on social media, yada, yada, yada. But basically, I am the only Damon Swade. There is no other. So
not another
if you Google
one.
That name, you'll find.
That's cool. Now, I wanted to ask you real quick. I mean, you were born in a small town in Texas, right? And what was that like growing up gay? I mean, at what point in your life did you realize that, or did you always know?
Well, I'll tell you, it's funny. I grew up in a very liberal house in a very rigid conservative area. And my family is Lebanese, and I don't look Lebanese at all.
Uh-huh.
And so I sort of grew up other, but in disguise. So in a funny way, I was in the closet about being an Arab, being Phoenician, before I was in the closet for being gay. And then I think I probably first knew something was different when I was probably 7 or 8.
Right.
By the time I was in puberty, I definitely knew something was different.
Right.
But by that point, I had so much experience being kind of in disguise because I was culturally other. I mean, we had mishwi for Christmas. We didn't kind of, you know, I grew up with my mother making kibineya because that was family dinner.
Right.
And so for me, I think that otherness was just part of my childhood. And my family was so supportive. I was really blessed because they wanted me to explore and imagine and do and go and be, whereas a lot of the people around me had families that were trying to extinguish them and sort of force them into boxes. So I saw a lot of horrible stuff, but I was very, very fortunate to have a family that just took me for who I was and wanted me to go and be the best me I could possibly be.
Yeah. Wow.
That's great.
And do you have siblings?
I do. Oh, I have a younger sister who is, she's a junior leaguer and a PTAer and total, like, bougie housewife. She loves it.
Awesome. So both your parents and your sister were supportive of you
Well, I was raised by my mom. My parents were divorced right after I was born, but my mom was very, very supportive and incredibly, she was a challenging parent. She was the parent who never baby talked to us as children.
Right.
We were always told if you talk to an adult, you have to talk like an adult. And so there was no cutesy little childness in our house. We read real books, and my mother gave me the Marquis de Sade's Justine when I was 12, and her exact words were, "I think you'll find this hilarious." So it was a very different way of growing up, because her feeling was, no child should believe anything is frightening, impure, or impossible. Like, children have to be aware of danger, children have to be aware of safety, but they need to take risks, because if you don't take risks, you never scar, you never learn to be alive.
That's true.
And so her thing was, you know, she wanted us to be superheroes. She wanted us to go out and leap tall buildings.
That's amazing. So, you're very fortunate to have a mother like that, you know.
Very blessed. Very, very blessed.
Was your father around?
I've never met him, actually, ironically. Wow. He actually lives in California, and I've never met him. He is, I believe he lives in San Diego. I have heard reports of him through people that knew my parents when they were much younger, but we've never had contact, and not really out of any animosity, but just because I don't know him. He's a total stranger.
Right, which is, you know, I mean, that's very painful, though, I would imagine, you know, for... Because, you know, I went through a divorce after my second child was born, but I stayed in their lives, you know. I mean, the divorce doesn't mean you have to disappear. But,
no, right.
You know, but I don't know why some fathers do that. You know, but
I think, you know, I think sometimes people don't want, I think people have a fantasy of what children will be. And when the child turns out to be this little meat sack that has needs and pains and anxieties, they just run as far as they, as they can away from it.
Right.
And I, again, like, I was blessed with a really loving, supportive family. And so, sure, as a little boy, there were times where I thought, why don't I have a dad like other kids do? But at the same time, a lot of the dads that I saw growing up were so horrible. I felt really blessed that, you know, I didn't have anyone hitting me with a belt or, you know, telling me I could or couldn't do stuff. Because, again, Texas at that time, the idea of the patriarchy was so strong, dads were not always the most loving, positive influence.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, well, you know, I mean, the thing is that, you know, it's a sad thing to see that happening. And it's not the first time I've seen, you know, fathers that just disappear and the kid never knows, you know. I mean, it's got to be like a missing part in your life. Or have you,
you know, it's funny. People are always surprised that I don't seek him out. People will ask me, they'll say, you know, don't you want to meet him? Haven't you ever wanted to? And the truth is, I'm not opposed to it.
Right.
I've just never felt it was necessary to take the time to disrupt both of our lives.
Right.
Because there's no way he could ever live up to the fantasy of my father I have in my head. And there's no way I could ever live up to the fantasy of the son that he has in his head.
Yeah.
At this point, we're theoretical for both of them. I mean, each
true.
Has a theoretical relative in their head.
Right.
And so we... It would be very difficult to get past the illusion to the real person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, you had the best of both worlds with your mom because she had that, you know, maternal instinct of being a mom, but was also very, like, real with you guys, like, as, like, the father figure would be.
No, she was very, and actually, I'll tell you something, in many ways, she was probably more of a hard ass than my father would have been because she had put up with her own issues as a child growing up, a minority woman growing up in Texas in the 50s and 60s. So she came to life almost like a warrior. You know, she was very, very Joan of Arc. She really attacked things and sort of cut a path through jungles so that by the time we were born, no one could tell her no. No one could scare her because she had survived so much and created her own business and created her own world for herself. And she was very much an old school queen bee southern matriarch. The entire family turned to her. So it was, in a lot of ways, it was a very traditional upbringing in a very untraditional home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, sounds interesting. You should write a biography probably eventually, right?
Yeah, at some point. The problem is no one would believe it. No one would believe my biography.
So I imagine you had an interesting life and stuff. So everybody go out and get the book, or the books rather, Damon Swade, and the new one is Bad Idea. And I guess that would be available on your website and Amazon and all
that. It's on my website, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere fine books are sold.
Sounds good.
It is available.
Okay, sounds good.
And thank you so much, both of you, for letting me come be on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was sorry that we couldn't have you in the studio, so I figured at least let's do a phone interview. And
absolutely. And the next time I'm in L.A., I will drop you all a line.
Sounds good. You're a lot of fun. Thank you, Damon.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
Good
All the best to you.
Everything.
Have a great day, guys.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, very interesting guy, you know.
Very interesting.
Yeah, what am I doing with this?
You're still turning those pages.
I'm still like going over the thing.
I'm like, you have a book in front of the mic? Like, are you just flipping pages or what?
No, it's like on his website. If you go, you'll see the when you touch the tabs, they make the sound, which is pretty cool, but it's not ideal for when you're on the radio.
Yeah, no. Not so much.
But that's my fault because I always like to like doodle with a mouse. I don't do anything. I just kind of run it across the screen and stuff. So that's
okay.
What happens. Yeah. So sometimes I just do those things.
Well, whatever keeps you entertained, Sam.
Yeah, whatever, you know, I mean, idiosyncrasies, you know, that everybody has one. You know?
Oh, yeah. Boy.
So let's get to some things in the news I wanted to discuss.
Yeah.
You heard of the Toronto mayor that smoked crack?
Yes.
We brought that up, I think, last week or something. So apparently, this was not the only time, you know. I mean, people are saying that he's been buying drugs in the last 2 years. So,
wow, and not just like, oh, he smokes marijuana or whatever. Yeah, like, no, like crack. Like, crack. Really, dude, crack?
Right.
Like,
I know.
Come on.
I know.
Yikes.
And the amazing thing about this guy is, like, they keep bringing up all this stuff. There was, like, a little rant that was captured on video by him while he was drunk and incoherent and stuff. You couldn't really understand what he was saying. But he definitely did not look like a mayor and did not behave like a mayor. You know? And this is supposed to be a, you know, a leader that people look up to and stuff. And all he can say is, I'm not stepping down. I'm not resigning, you know. But you know he's going to be thrown out.
There's,
I mean, nobody's going to let him stay there.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
you know, this is democracy here. You
not
don't
much
stay
you can really
you
stand
to.
For
yeah.
in that situation. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Ugh, that's weird.
I know. You know, I mean, the thing is that if you were like, in the public eye, would you do something stupid like that, you know? It absolutely makes no sense, you know.
No,
the same
I know.
With those guys that cheat and have mistresses.
And the wiener guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, dude, again, like, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
like,
I know.
You gotta pass, like, people. And that's the thing. People can be very, very forgiving. You know, if you give it time and you, you know, come
that's
back
true.
With the right amount of, you know, momentum and positivity and... You know, and you're humble, and you know, people can be very forgiving.
Right.
But it's like, again, really?
Yeah.
Like, you were just like winning back, you
yeah.
know, the you know,
well,
the heart of the people, and now, you know,
yeah,
and
he was
screwed
doing,
it up again.
Yeah. And he was doing well in the mayor's race in New York until this thing came up again. And yeah, people were willing to forgive, I guess.
Yeah.
Because he was doing well. And then the second time came up and people just said, we've had enough of him, you know?
Yeah. No, it's just not right.
Yeah.
You know, and then these wives, you know, that feel like, you know, just for sake of being in the public eye, like,
right.
you know, just kind of go along with it and be like, oh, I support my husband. I support my husband. But it's like... At some point, like, girl, you gotta look out for yourself. Man, like, do you really, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, everybody can see what's going on, but,
right.
and again, I get that, too, because that's, I mean, that's gotta be a really, really tough position.
Right.
You know, all the counseling that they went to and everything, like,
right.
you know, they were really trying, and it's just, there's just gotta come to a point where it's like, you gotta look out for yourself, girl.
Yeah.
Like, I know the public is looking at you, but you've got your own life.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
like you're in a glass house.
You can't run it by protecting things from the media.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I know, you know, and they're saying he's not cooperating with police either. So this is a person who feels he's above the law, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Well, it's a shame.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, it gives us something to talk about.
Yeah. So we were talking about drugs, actually, and Mike Tyson is saying that he used to be totally coked out in his fights.
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, how, you know, I don't know how, but it must have given him a lot of energy, because I can't see how when you're on drugs you can actually fight someone and win.
Yeah, I don't know.
But so, I mean, but interestingly enough, he says, well, he says it was a... full-blown cokehead, and I guess he tried cocaine at age 11 and was given alcohol for the first time as a baby.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. I mean, who does that? Who gives alcohol to a baby?
I don't know.
Yeah. You know, and there's people that give, like, cigarettes and joints to little kids and stuff. It's like, come on, these are your kids, you know, what are you doing?
That's
but people are crazy. Some people should not be allowed to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
What are you gonna do, right,
yeah.
Sam?
What are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
Yeah, I'm on the verge of having like a big cough here. I don't know why my throat is so dry this morning.
You know what? Mine too. It's so scratchy. And also, like, I don't know if I'm, like, allergic to something right now, but I'm, like, having, like, crazy, like, allergies.
Yeah, I know. You walk in with, like, a stuffy nose.
I know.
And I'm, like, about to cough any minute.
What's wrong with us?
I don't know, but it's not easy talking on the air every day.
I know. It could be like the weather change, just the drastic from like yesterday to today. You know, a lot of times that that triggers it.
Yeah.
But you know what was weird about the weather yesterday? Even though it was so cloudy, it was really warm.
Yeah.
And last night, actually at night, it was really warm.
Really?
Yes, that was really surprised me a lot, actually, when I walked outside.
Wow. I didn't feel that. To me, it was cold, but... What do I know?
Well, up in the hills area, it was warm.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I walked out, and I'm like, oh, I don't need this jacket. And I walked back in the house and put it away.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to this this place called Wax Rabbit last night. And it's, you know, I'm a little bit confused as to, like, you know, the name of everything because... I used to go to this place and it was called Vignette, but it was not that long ago. Like I thought it was still Vignette. Yeah. Then all of a sudden I'm seeing all these postings and listings for Wax Rabbit Tuesdays. Uh-huh. Like it's just on Tuesdays. It's called Wax Rabbit, but I'm like, wait, but it's the same venue as Vignette.
Right.
So is it not Vignette anymore? And going in there yesterday, I mean it looks the exact same. Like they didn't really change anything except for there's a bunch of artwork on the walls.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was like a little stage area and there were people like actually painting art pieces on the stage while everyone's like rocking out to hip hop. It was an interesting, different vibe, but yeah, I mean, it's still a very nice venue, but man, it was packed. Right. On a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Man, nobody works in L.A.
Yeah, no, nobody does. To Starbucks right now, you'll see half the city sitting at Starbucks.
Tuesday night, packed. Yeah. Like, that's kind of what they say, you know, like, all the cool kids, like, go out during the week, and, like, the nerdy losers go out during the weekend.
Yeah.
Only in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's true. But... but just going back to the Mike Tyson thing, you might wonder how he passed all the drug tests because they give him obviously drug tests and stuff.
Right. I mean, unless maybe he paid him off or something.
No, he was using his whizzer. You know what his whizzer is? A whizzer is a fake penis that you can put urine in and people use it for drug testing.
Oh, yeah. They had an episode of Entourage like that.
Really?
Yes, where he has to get a drug test for, you know, something before he could do some kind of movie or something because he was going to rehab. I don't know. I don't remember.
Right.
But either way, yeah, that's what he had to do.
Yeah.
It's like they gave
But obviously
like
women can't do that. You know, I don't know what women do.
I don't know.
But a fake wiener, man.
I don't know what women do. But yeah. Yeah, I remember that I just thought that was like something made up for like the sake of the show. I didn't know that
people do that.
People actually do that.
Yeah, no, I mean the thing is that
crazy.
I think when you go to rehab and things like that or drug testing, they actually have a person standing with you right there, right?
Yeah, like that's what happened in the episode.
Yeah, so that's why they do that, you know, they probably just pull it out, it looks like a penis.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, what are they going to do? Be like, oh, can I, you know, like,
yeah.
can I handle
can
that?
I touch
like,
that? But I'm sure they do. I mean, you know, they get pretty invasive in those places.
Well, nowadays,
because
I'm
they
sure
know
they have much, you know.
Yeah, because addicts are liars, you know. Many addicts are liars by their own admission.
Oh, of course.
So you have to be careful with that, you know.
Yeah, I saw this one show where this woman, you know, I don't know, it was one of those like CSI type, you know, kind of forensics shows.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they had she kept bringing like her daughter with her. And then she would use, you know, her daughter's pee instead of hers.
Really?
Yeah. Because, of course, they're like threatening to take, you know, her kid away if she doesn't sober up.
Right.
But she was still, you know, she was still using.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then the daughter ended up like telling, you know, one of the detectives or whatever, and then that's how they caught her. But, you know, she didn't know any better. She's like, yeah, we played this little game. It's a secret and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then it's like, whoops, busted.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I mean, the thing is that people, get into drugs, and then it's a sad story when a kid has an addicted parent, you know, because yeah. it's like they have to raise themselves, you know. I mean, an addicted person like an alcoholic or, you know, someone into heroin or whatever, they can't possibly give any attention to the kid.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No, did you actually?
Addictions are very, like, selfish things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you've been keeping up with it at all. I heard one of the calls that Charlie Sheen made into TMZ.
Yeah.
Talking about his ex who's been, you know, when they drop the kids off, like, how it's just, like, a madhouse. And then right. he thinks that she's, you know, not sober and hasn't been, you know, taking care of that. I mean, I haven't really been following up with it. I heard that one phone call.
Yeah.
But I don't know if, you know. I don't know what that's all about, but yeah. They'd say that they'd pick the kids up and they would just be acting like crazy little monsters. You know, they'd come over there and they'd be like standing on the ledge of the couch and jumping off, and like she just completely was not even paying attention to the children.
Yeah, you see, so, that's pretty bad stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And especially when the mother does that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really sad.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the thing is addictions destroy. That's the bottom line, you know. And it's easy to say, you know, get over it, but addiction is something that's pretty
especially if you have that cruel. Addictive personality.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You're just,
you know, and you just
you're doomed for good.
Get hooked on everything, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this thing also I wanted to bring up is, I guess this woman started a website. It's a revenge website.
Oh.
And it's called she's a homewrecker.com. So what they do is if you find that your husband is having an affair, then you post the pictures and the name of the mistress on the website to shame them.
Wow. So, wow.
You know, so you got to be careful, you know, I mean, but I'm glad they have it because, you know, some time ago on the show, we had a woman that has a website for cheating men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was some kind of, you know, where I guess, you know, if you know someone who cheated or if it's your husband or whatever, you put their name and picture up there so other women would know not to date them, you know.
Yep.
And obviously that was controversial, but I asked her, I said, well, how come this doesn't go the other way? How come women can't be posted on the website?
Mm-hmm.
She says, well, mostly it's husbands that cheat and stuff. I said, I don't think so. You know, I don't think so. I think many women cheat as well. And so there you go. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a mistress,
but this one is,
you're gonna
be
posted
mistress,
on the website.
The other woman, the quote-unquote other woman.
You know, but it's getting, critics are saying, you know, that how do you know it's accurate and it could lead to defamation?
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. I mean, two best girlfriends can get in a, you know, catty fight over other stupid nonsense and be like, this bitch, I'm just going to pretend that she cheated on, you know, whatever, and my husband cheated on me with her, and I'm just going to, you know, blast her and post her photo when this chick's like, not even married, and it's just a crazy cat lady.
Yeah. But, you know,
but,
I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying, though. I don't think that if you blame only the cheater, because to me, it's like even the person that is the outsider of the relationship.
I feel like you need to have both of them on there.
Yeah,
like,
you know,
as
I mean,
a couple,
the thing
like
is,
both photos, like the man and
like,
the woman.
I would
like,
never.
These two people had relations and they weren't supposed to be, and
right.
blah, blah.
You know, I mean, it's not like the let's say the mistress, it's not like she was forced to do it and
or
you know, she chose
maybe
to
she
do
didn't
it.
Know.
And
you know, I'm sure that happens a lot too, you know.
Yeah,
they didn't even
true.
Know that he was married and had a family and whatever, you know, guys could be really sneaky.
But I mean, many times women do know that and they keep going anyway.
Yeah, and that's
and
wrong.
Not only wrong, but it's dangerous, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. who wants to be exposed to somebody else being mad at him? And so that's one thing. And another thing is, you know, you're hurting somebody else. You know, you may not know the wife, but you're hurting
a
her,
lot of
you know.
People.
Yeah.
You know.
So, I mean, to say, well, he was the one that was married and he was the one that was cheating is bullshit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And most of the time, the husband doesn't end up leaving the wife. Like, that's the thing. These mistresses think, oh, he's going to leave her. He's going to leave her. He's going to be with me. And then it, like, never happens. And, like, friggin' 10 years go by. And then it's like, I thought, you know, what's going on with the divorce? I thought he was going to leave her. You know, like, oh, he's still working on it. Like, oh, boy. At some point, you just got to, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's either way. It's all, you know, a really bad situation.
Yeah, it is, you know, and I don't recommend cheating for either side, you know. Mm-hmm. I just, I don't get it, you know. I mean, if you want someone else, just end your relationship and go into something else, you know. Mm-hmm. But to have your cake and eat it too, I think it's very hurtful to the people around you, and it can't possibly help, you know.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And finally, I guess Alex Baldwin has a stalker now, and I guess she showed up at his house during his engagement to his current wife, so that was some time ago.
Whoops.
But now she gets some jail time, but not for stalking, but for being shouting outbursts in the courtroom. So, I mean, obviously something's wrong with her. Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, it's like, I guess at a certain point it could be flattering that someone likes you so much, but at a certain point they become a stalker, no?
Yeah, it can get pretty frightening.
Yeah.
I've had.
I mean, if a hot woman stalked me, I'd be fine. But unless if I was married or something, you know, then you don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, stalkers against your will usually. So I guess that's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, Alec Baldwin. You know, he can deal with it. He's dealt with a lot of stuff before.
yes, he has.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for today, folks. We're going to have a great rest of the day. So are you. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.